Thank you for everyone for being here today. I am in Wisconsin where the sun is shining, and I am thrilled to be with you talking about one of my favorite subjects when we do the training at AHA Process. Voices is definitely one of the things that I really like to spend a great amount of time on. So when Stephanie asked me to step in, that was an easy sell. Now, I need to tell you that my children would tell you that I love to talk on the phone and that I'm on the phone often, and most of that is business. But I can honestly tell you that a phone call with 100 people is nothing I've ever done before, especially when you don't get to talk back. So I am sitting in a school. I've been in a school all morning, and I want you to know that I spend a lot of my time in schools. It's not something that I just talk to people about, but I live where you live, and that's in the school building. And I really live in the regular ed classroom and really believe that, you know, they say, why did the robber rob the bank? Well, that's where the money is. And I happen to believe that where the action is in the regular ed classroom, and that as we move marginalized students into our classrooms and train teachers, that we will continue to get great results. You know, as we talk about schools and we think about schools and we think about those internal voices and students today, one of the things that I want you to think about that AHA Process has thought about and Dr. Payne has been really adamant about in the last few years as she's written her new book, both research-based strategies that I highly recommend you look at if you've not seen it, and also the under-resourced learner, both wonderful pieces of work to work with in your district. But as we look at those books, and especially the under-resourced books, one of the places that we start thinking about is thinking about school. And, you know, in the past 8 years, and again, I've been around for a very long time, you know, we have moved to a place where we are always thinking about student achievement. And that's a great thing. And we have moved many students on the continuum of learning. But as we've looked at schools over the past few years, we've started to look at schools as an assessment center. Kids come in, we teach them, we test them, we train them, and we sort them. And one of the things that Dr. Payne really wants us to think about is school as an improvement center, where the student comes in and we take the student wherever they are, resourced, under-resourced, and again, if you know the work of Dr. Payne, you know that when we talk about students in poverty, we're not talking about students who just don't have money, because it's really not about the money, it's about the resources. So we take those students who are under-resourced, we put them in a place called school every day, and we make that school an improvement center. How we work with students, how we talk to students, all of that is part of that improvement process. Another thing that we spend some time on at AHA Process is thinking about Gen Y. You know, one of the things about students today is they're very different than when I was a child, where authority meant you just did what someone said, and you really didn't ask why. When I got to high school and college, we questioned authority, but we still believed that they, whoever they was, had the authority. Today, Gen Y says, I need mutual respect. And Dr. Payne, for a very long time, has talked about learning being double-coded, that there's the cognitive side of learning and that there's the relationship side of learning. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the relationship side. And I really believe that as we think about voices and how we both get kids to process internally that internal voice that they hear and how we speak to them in what voice, that will continue to build and bridge that mutual respect. I work with a school district. I have the pleasure of working with a school district in Pennsylvania that AHA has been very involved in, and we've had some great results. Recently, they did a survey with the students, and the thing that jumps absolutely off the page on the survey is that the students did not feel respected by the staff. The students did not feel respected by the staff. Now, the staff would probably have said the same thing, that they also didn't feel respected. years ago, we would say, well, it doesn't really matter if they respect him or not. That's the teacher. That's what you need to do. Well, that doesn't work so much anymore. It's really mutual respect that we're looking for. And what does that look like? What does mutual respect look like in a school? And I would say, if we talk about voices, mutual respect looks like we use the adult voice. Let me tell you a little bit about voices and the voice. There are three voices that people have internally: the child voice, the parent voice, and the adult voice. This is adapted from the work of Eric Byrne. The child voice is the voice that is victimized. It's emotional. It's defensive. It's whining. It has a very loose mentality, and there's a lot of strong nonverbals that go with the child voice. Now, when the teacher or the staff member is using the child voice, it sounds something like this: "Oh, you guys don't do that. The principal's going to be upset. I need you guys to do what's right, or otherwise I might lose my job." The child voice sounds something like, "Oh, not again, you guys." There is no way to get children to do what you want them to do in a school setting when you're using the child voice. The parent voice is the voice that is authoritarian. It's directive. It's judgmental. It's "I'm in charge, you're not." It's win-lose. It's sometimes threatening. And it's almost always punitive. When the teacher uses that voice, that's inappropriate. "Life's not fair. Get over it." "I never said life was going to be fair." "Why would you do that? That was really stupid." The problem is when we use that parent voice, it's fighting words. The parent voice, and sometimes we need to use it, stops behavior. You can use the parent voice to stop the behavior, but if school is an improvement center, then we need to use every experience as a learning situation, and we need to teach the student to change the behavior. That's where the mutual respect happens, is that we don't put down the student for what they've done, but we teach the student with the adult voice. So let me tell you a little bit about the adult voice. The adult voice is the voice that's non-judgmental. It's free of negative. It's factual. It's often just garnering information. It's question format. And it's you start with the attitude of win-win. Even if something bad has happened, you start with the attitude of win-win. Our nonverbals, we try in the adult voice to be very free of nonverbals. It sounds something like this, and this one is one of my favorites. "Help me understand what just happened here. Help me understand." You put the student in a place that they've now become the helper to the adult, and they understand that you're free from judgment. And that's not to say something that needs to be talked about that was inappropriate, that didn't happen, that should have happened, isn't going to be dealt with farther on down the process. But at the beginning of the process, the adult voice says, "Help me understand." It would say something like, "For me to be comfortable in this situation, I need to understand a little bit more about what happened." Or, "For me to be comfortable, I need you to do the following thing." It says something like, "You know, at this point, we agree to disagree." It sounds something like, "Let me help you with some choices in this particular situation." The adult voice changes behavior. The parent voice stops behavior. Now, sometimes the behavior needs to stop. You walk into a room, something's going on that is terribly inappropriate, the adult voice needs to happen at that very moment. Without put down, but when you begin to understand and are picking apart the information, that's when you're going to go the adult voice. When we talk about students in poverty, one of the things that we know is that many students in poverty act as their own parents. Because the parent is either working a tremendous amount and there aren't a room or aren't adults help when the child is out there parenting themselves, and oftentimes they're also parenting younger siblings because of the situation that the kids are growing in. So when school, we go to a student, we use the parent voice. The student who is parenting themselves feels like they have as much right to talk back to you in the way that you were talking to them. The situation escalates, and generally what happens is the teacher will send the student out of the room. Why did you do that? That was inappropriate. It was not inappropriate. Yes, it was. We can't do that at school. Nobody ever told me that. How many times do you need to be told? Don't talk to me that way. You don't talk to me that way. Down to the office. Do you see the progression? It builds and builds and builds. The problem is the student leaves the classroom, and if indeed, it's like the money in the bank, where the student needs to be is in the classroom. And if we continue to send them out of the classroom for inappropriate talk, how are they ever going to get to the benchmarks, the curriculum, the universal curriculum, if they're sitting down in the office wondering what was inappropriate? Many times with Gen Y, things that my generation find completely inappropriate, when you ask a student, they do not know the hidden rules of work or school, and they do not know what was inappropriate about calling someone a name that is used. You know, one of the things that I don't particularly prefer at all, but one of the things when we talk to students, we know that they use swear words, particularly the F word, as a noun, a verb, an adjective, and an adverb. And basically that word has no meaning to them. The problem is that that word has a ton of meaning to those of us at school. It's terribly inappropriate, and you need to be, and something needs to happen. Well, again, if that student is acting as their own parent, they say, I can say what I want to say. And then we need to do the teaching and the adult voice about there's two sets of rules. And at school, although those words really don't have meaning for you, and you really don't know why it's inappropriate, I'm going to tell you that at school and at work, we can't say those things. And then we're going to work through the adult voice to teach what is appropriate behavior for school. So communicating in the child voice, the parent voice, or the adult voice as the staff member is incredibly important. But we also have to teach the student the voices. I think the way that you teach the students the voices is to call it and to teach it, to call them by name and have the kids practice using different voices and role-playing different situations. So the child voices that when the child or the student, high school students as well, really middle school students, but after about third or fourth grade, kids know the difference. The child voice when the child was speaking would sound something like, you don't like me. I flunked because you don't like me. The teacher doesn't like me. They all pick on me. I don't know what to do. It's all your fault. She blamed me. She doesn't like me. You make me mad. All those whiny voices that really don't get you anywhere in a school setting, where we have to say to the child, help me understand what the real problem is. Remember, every behavior has a payoff. Every behavior has a payoff. So if a child, if the student uses a child's voice, there's some payoff because they must be getting what they want. Oh, honey, that's okay. You know, all the kids in the class do like you. However, that's when we're responding to all that whining. And we all know, both as teachers and as parents, whining only works if somebody responds to it. So that child voice is really that whiny voice. We talked a little bit about the parent voice that goes on inside the student's head. That parent voice is the voice that says, I'm equal to you. Why are you talking to me like that? I know life's not fair. You want to talk about life not being fair? I'll tell you about life not being fair. Those are those kinds of voices that a student has when they're in thinking in the parent voice. When they're thinking in the adult voice, it helps them say, what could I have done differently? Help me to process a way that I could have done this differently. Maybe we can just choose to disagree. My choices have actions, and those actions aren't going to be accountable to. So that adult voice is that internal piece that keeps the student in a place where they're learning and growing and making better choices. A few of the strategies that come around the adult voice that we like to use. One of my favorites is to talk to kids and to use a very simple phrase, and I use it all the time when I'm in classrooms. I use it with my own children, who actually are grown. But it goes something like this. If you choose, then you choose. Remember, students in poverty oftentimes, because they're living so in the moment, aren't thinking ahead, aren't mediating ahead, aren't processing ahead. They don't back plan. They don't see the consequences. And they know that there'll be forgiveness at the end of the consequences, and then the whole process will repeat itself. So if you use something very simple like, if you choose, then you choose, it's a great strategy. If you choose to cheat, then you've chosen to lose my trust. But you've also chosen to let me know that you don't know the material. And my job as a teacher is to make sure that you know this benchmark. So then we're just going to have to go back through it. So if you choose to cheat, there's a couple different things that are going to happen. But if you choose to take the assessment and let us see what you know or what you don't know, then we can go back through and help you with the places that you're stuck, with the understanding that you may have missed. So if you choose to cheat, here's what's going to happen. If you choose to take the assessment in an honest manner, then you've chosen. If you choose to fight, then you've chosen to not really solve a conflict. All you've done is put yourself in a situation where either you are going to lose faith with whoever you won or lost the fight to, you're going to end up in a place where you're going to have to miss class, you know, X, Y, Z. If you choose, then you've chosen. It really helps reframe things for students in that adult voice. Another thing that we like to think about is a bracketing situation. What I like to do with that is, again, really treat kids with mutual respect and understand that what they bring into the classroom is, in many times, heavy, adult-like. And so I like to treat them that way. When they come into the classroom, I give them each a note card, and I ask them to write down the things that they're thinking about right now that are going to keep them from thinking about integers, or the photosynthesis lesson, or writing their paper on you know, whatever it is. What are the things that you're really thinking about? What are the things that are bothering you today? What are some things that, are going to keep you from thinking about the work that we have at hand, the hour that I have with you, or the block of time that I have with you? And even little kids, I've done this right down to second graders. I don't know that I've done it with first graders. And kids just write, my dog died. My parents were fighting. I don't feel good. And you just ask them, you treat them with mutual respect. I ask them, I have a box that I use, and I collect them. I ask them if they'll give those problems to me for the hour. Sometimes I have them actually put it in an envelope and address it to the and address it to themselves, not a full address, but just their name, whatever. And I ask, and I collect them in a box, and I ask them for the hour and tell them that for the hour, we're just going to keep that stuff in a box. When the hour's over, I tell them to pick up their envelope if they want their issues, or if they don't want their issues, just leave them right there, and I'll dispose of them without reading them. Again, it's a way to have them think like an adult and help them understand that maybe the reason I can't concentrate, maybe the reason that I'm being annoyed by the kids sitting next to me, maybe the reason it really doesn't have to do with the fact that the teacher's boring or the teacher doesn't like me, but maybe it really has to do with the fact that I'm really thinking about what's going on at home. I'm thinking about my girlfriend, or I'm thinking about phi ed class, and that I don't know what's going to happen in there today, and I'm feeling some anxiety about that. Just treat the students like the mature individuals that we are trying to get them to be. So bracketing, or box, I call it boxing it up, is also another way to think about helping kids think in the adult voice. To help them think in the adult voice, you have to treat them like an adult. One more thing that I want to talk about before we open it up to questions, a couple different things, and that is the voice that you start in is usually the voice that you're going to end in. So if you start in that parent voice, you're usually going to escalate, and it's going to be a no-win situation. If you start in the adult voice, there generally will be resolution, and you'll come to a conclusion that's good for the student and for you. And hopefully you've used it as a learning situation. You know, one of the things, because of No Child Left Behind, AYP, Schools in Need of Improvement, Districts in Need of Improvement, and I work with those things every day, and they are very real. But one of the things that has happened in the 8 years since No Child Left Behind is we have put so much emphasis on academics with our staff. I can walk into a room and start trying to teach teachers or just assess and talk about what's going on in their school and what they want as strategies. Just give me a strategy, give me a strategy, give me another strategy. And we really lost some of the, because we don't feel like we have the time, and I'm not sure if we do or we don't, but we really have lost the sense of and the time to think about children as whole beings and to train teachers about students as whole beings. You know, back in the 70s when I was in teacher training and in the 80s, we spent a lot of teacher time on dysfunctional families, talking about AODA issues, talking about discipline, conflict resolution. We did lots of those kinds of things. And now teacher training is basically strategies and achievement. Somewhere we need a balance. And I do think that part of talking about voices, mutual respect, thinking about students as real-life people, not just test takers. And I'm all for improving student achievement. I spent my life helping teachers become better at pedagogy. But what I know is you need pedagogy, you need great benchmarks, but you also need the side that understands where the student is coming from, that understands the resources or the lack of resources that a student brings to the classroom. And students in poverty bring less resources. They're not stupid. They just don't have the resources that some other students have. And they certainly don't have the resource of that inner voice talking to them in the adult voice. So with that said, one more thing that I want to talk about is there's some research, and if anybody wants the article, I can certainly send it to you via AHA, or I can give you my email address. The reason I like this research is basically what it says is that the brain research for students under the age of 12, and what I would say is I wonder, again, no research on it, but because we know children in poverty's brains are not as developed, I wonder if students in poverty, if the research would show that it's older than 12, but under the age of 12, the brain does not have the ability to substitute. The brain does not have the ability to substitute. You, the adult, needs to give the substitution. Don't run in the hall. All that does is tell the student what not to do. It doesn't tell the student what to do. Stand. I need you to form a line. I need the line to walk at this pace. I need the line to move down the hallway with your mouth closed and hands to your side. Instead of don't run in the hallway, don't do this, don't do that. We need to substitute under the age of 12. So when we use the parent voice and we say stop it, don't do that, that's inappropriate, that's not fair, that was immature. We don't give the student what they're supposed to do. And it's not just a good idea. What the research says is that the brain doesn't have the ability to find that substitution. So within the adult voice, within reframing, we can give the student the substitution right then and there, and then we make school the improvement center. So the substitution becomes our responsibility as the adult. And if we're looking for the substitution, I guarantee that you're in the adult voice. And it's one of the ways that you're going to know you're in the adult voice if you give the students what to do. My little sister, I guess she's not that little, my little sister is a county parks director in a major metropolitan area. And one of the things that she's really gone to in her, when you get to the park and it says, don't bring your dog, don't bring bottles, don't bring a picnic basket, don't do this, don't walk on the grass. It tells you everything you're not supposed to do. One of the things that she's done, because when we make rules like that, all they do is have people question the rule or say, well, I didn't walk on that part of the grass. Well, it wasn't really a bottle. Well, is a ferret a dog? So I brought my cat. You know, I mean, you're always looking for a way around the rule. So you bring the substitution is enjoy the park. Bring your whole family, but leave your dog at home. It's just that reframing in an adult voice. And what she's done in her parks district is she puts up new signs and at the front of the park is that they're all written in the adult voice. They're not written in the parent voice about what not to do. It's written what to do. And what she wants people to do is to enjoy the park. Do you see how that builds a relationship? And that if in a school we talk in the adult voice with the things on our walls and how we talk to students about what to do instead of what not to do. So that's a little bit about the adult voice. I have a few more things, but I'm going to ask Stephanie now if she has any questions or if anybody's brought in any questions.
I don't have any questions yet, but I'll just remind everybody that if they do have a question, they can email us at questions@ahaprocess.com, and that's A-H-A-P-R-O-C-E-S-S with no punctuation between. But that's it. I'll let you know if we get one.
Wonderful. So I, even a comment would be great. I'll tell you, those of you who are educators and who teach adults, I'll tell you, talking to yourself in a room for a half hour is an interesting, with no feedback, is just an interesting experiment to wonder if, I don't know, it's an interesting experience.
Well, Peggy, I have a comment, and,
okay.
And you know, especially I'm thinking about interactions with my children or with children at school, and I think, you know, another piece about the adult voice is that when you use it all the time and when you have it up in your classroom and you're modeling it.
Yeah.
And so you're giving them, you're reinforcing it at a whole other level. Do you think that's true as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You're always a model, and they see it happening. And students begin to see that Mrs. So-and-so talks one way and Mrs. So-and-so talks another way. And they begin to be able to feel the difference. And hopefully it's modeled, but it also needs to be taught. And sometimes in our curriculum, where do we have time to teach that? I'm not sure what the answer to that is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think somewhere to find that might be in a history lesson. I'm a social studies teacher. Might be in a history lesson as you pick apart a speech that someone wrote to teach the kids about the parent and the adult voice or the child voice or watching the news and watching how, you know, someone gives an interview and how someone else might give an interview. Do you hear the child voice? Do you hear the parent voice? Do you hear the adult voice? What exactly do you hear? Another little thing that we talked about is, and this is how I tell people to check themselves, and that is the parent voice is anything you would say shaking your finger. It's just a good little tool. You know, if you can say it shaking your finger, you would never say, help me understand, while shaking your finger. But you would say, I told you it was inappropriate. I don't need that now. I'm really tired. We've got stuff to do. I mean, imagine pointing your finger and saying all, any of those things. You can pretty much do it. Okay, do you want me to beg for you to type in a question? I'm kidding. But here's one more thing that I do. One of the things that, and any of you who have done some of the Roomy Pain training, and if you've not, or if you have new teachers, I highly recommend you go back through day one. I honestly, and again, I'm a presenter, I'm a trainer, I do all that, but every time I go back through it, which has been hundreds of times, there's always something new, and somebody always has a new way to look at something. And so even if you've done some of this training, even just a two-hour brush-up to pull out your books, or at a staff meeting to look at it, maybe buy the new research-based book, see if there's anything in there that appeals to you. But I think just because we've done the poverty training like once, I hear people say, oh, we've done that. And then when I talk to teachers in their classrooms and we're doing other things, you know, I'll pull the poverty piece back in and the resources. You know, one of the things with response to intervention is we're talking a lot about interventions. And I don't know how you can start talking about response to intervention in the classroom without thinking about the resources that the child brings. I don't know how you can talk about PBIS, which, again, both of those are huge across the country. We're all trying to figure out how to implement both RTI and PBIS. And I'm not sure without thinking about the resources that a student brings to the classroom, I'm not sure how you have those conversations in a real way if you're not thinking about what the student actually brings to the table. That said, in a discipline situation, and I really believe that discipline situations are all about learning, one of the things that I like to do for teachers to help them model and train themselves to get the information, many times what we hear is, you know, I don't have time for that. I totally understand. Sometimes maybe you train the parapros to get the information, or the aides, or, you know, somebody else in the building. But here's one of the things, and I put these four questions on a card. One of the tricks, when there's something that I want teachers to remember, right at their desk, is I just use labels, and I print things on labels, and then I take labels and put them onto index cards, and then I laminate them. And so it doesn't take much time, because you can just cut and paste the labels on a label program, and it's a great way to go. But it's these four questions in a discipline situation that I like to ask kids. And, you know, one of the things is if you have a procedure that you use in your school or your classroom, and all the teachers are using it, quite frankly, it is PDIS. But it also is, you don't treat different kids different ways. The one way to absolutely squash mutual respect in your school is not to treat everybody with the same procedures. I was recently in a high school, and I was doing kind of an assessment of what was shaken out in my high school, and I interviewed a bunch of kids. And one of the things the kids said is, the jocks can wear coats and hats, but we can't. If you're on the basketball team, you get to do this. If you're not on the basketball team, the rule is different. That's a problem for mutual respect. So if you have some sort of procedures, that's what keeps you in line, and all staff members end up treating kids the same way, no matter what happens. So the first question is, in a situation where something happens, you want to start with, what did you do? Let the kid, the student, have his due process. Let him have his time. Tell me, what did you do? And all you do is listen. The second question, and again, remember, I give these to teachers, so they're reading the questions, so that they start to model how you're going to get to an outcome. The second question is, when you did that, what did you want? And that's a better question than why did you do that? Most of the time when you ask the student, why did you do that? The answer is, I don't know. When you ask a student, when you did that, what did you want? You get a lot of information. When you did that, what did you want? The third question goes something like this. What are three other things you could have done instead? What are three other things you could have done instead? And if the student says, I don't know, they really might not know, because remember, their brains may not substitute. You may have to give them a list of 15 things that they could have done differently, and then have them say, out of this list, what could you have done differently? And then the question is, what will you do next time? Again, remember, school is an improvement place, not just an assessment place. So what will you do next time? What will you do next time? So what did you do? When you did that, what did you want? What are the three things you could have done instead? And what will you do next time? A simple process. But here's what I'm going to tell you, is if you have teachers in a training session, and you teach them that, they're going to like it. And maybe you have a process in your school that you already use that's better than that. Cool, send it to me. I want to know it. I know there's great, great stuff out there. But if you don't write it down for them and give it to them where they can put it right on their desk, they won't remember what the questions are when it comes time. Because in the heat of the situation, remember, your adrenaline's flowing, and they aren't trained to ask these questions. They're trained to stop the behavior instead of change the behavior. So they need a prompt. I need a prompt. You probably need a prompt. We all need a prompt. So to have that little thing sitting on your desk, kind of colorful, a little, a little clip art on it, laminated so you can find it amongst all the other things on your desk, I found it to be really helpful. And when I go into teachers' classrooms that I work with, I see their little cheat sheet on their desk. Does it take longer to do the four-step process using the adult voice? Yep. But if you can nip that behavior in the bud and change the behavior, it may take longer now, but you aren't going to say it all year long. Stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it. Because stop it just doesn't work. It may stop for the next 10 seconds, but it's just going to raise its ugly head again. So you begin to really put processes in place in your classroom, in your school. And I think the results that you'll find is that you build that mutual respect, and that's what students are asking for. That's what students are looking for. Gen Y expects it, and that will double code the learning, and you will see improved student learning for all students. That's not dependent on classism. So,
I've got a couple questions for you if you want.
Okay, great.
We've had a number of questions that are all kind of along the same lines, and that is, when developing classroom rules, how do you move teachers away from the parent voice and help them to replace it with the adult voice?
That's a great question. And I can certainly send you some adult voice if you email me. But one of the things that I have a simple, you may be able to think of other ones, but there's four rules in my classroom. Be helpful, be friendly, don't hurt or embarrass. Be helpful, be friendly, don't hurt or embarrass. It's worked in my family, and it works in my classroom. And almost anything you can think of will fall into be helpful, be friendly, don't hurt or embarrass. You push somebody's books on the floor, you say, now, is that helpful? How about picking those back up, because that really would be helpful. Embarrassing is anything, I mean, we know embarrassing. And I'll never forget the day that I had a boy say, as loud as he could, ninth grade class at a teaching, she smells like tuna, I'm not sitting next to her. I thought I was going to die. The young lady, it was awful. I mean, that's an embarrassment. And to be able to come to him, because he, to say that's inappropriate, again, no, that's embarrassing. Don't hurt or embarrass. One of our rules is don't embarrass. And that hurt and embarrass. So you may have another way to say those positive things. I have others that I can certainly model and give to you, send to you, but that's the adult voice that I use.
And how about if you're trying to train the other adults in the school, whether it's you're trying to train your teachers to use this, or you're trying to train, office staff members,
yep,
or cafeteria,
yep,
workers, support staff?
Yep, yep. I highly recommend that you train everyone in your building, office staff particularly. Again, because I do a lot of training across the country, I sit in a lot of offices waiting for whoever the important people are. And so I see how kids are treated often. And I will tell you that office staff is not trained to talk to students in the adult voice. And it can certainly set kids off for the entire day. I think you have to direct teach it in a short period of time, and then I think you have to practice it and model it. And I think, again, just like the substitution, I think sometimes we need to catch each other, and we need to just give the replacement word. So I don't think there's any way around it. I think role-playing, honestly, watching role-playing, it's funny because most of us, I mean, in school, we're kind of used to school, you know. Did you ever play? I played school my whole life from age probably four. I played school. I got to be the teacher, and I used the parent voice all the time. Don't, you know, because you're in charge. It's your kingdom. So it is a very, very different, and we want order and control. And we think that we get order and control using the parent voice. Really, we get order and control using the adult voice. But honestly, I think you have to direct teach it to everyone and then practice and role play. Make up a role play. Stephanie probably knows this better, but I think we have videos, too, of Dr. Payne doing a bunch of different situations in different voices, maybe. Do we have
We do.
So, and those are great. I mean, because, again, then it's not, you know, me in your building role-playing. It's two people on a screen, so we can say that the video is, you know, kind of silly or whatever, you know, but we also can pick apart how it works. And I think that was the point of Dr. Payne doing those vignettes. So talk to Stephanie or email Stephanie or AHA to get those role-playing videos and vignettes that you could watch. The other thing that we have, too, and these I use all the time when I'm training, is we have movie vignettes. And if you are a trainer, I think you have to be a trainer maybe to buy these, I'm not sure. But I use, when I'm doing the training on this, and I use the vignettes from movies. Breakfast Club is one I use. John Q is one I use. Million Dollar Baby. So I'll use little vignettes, and we'll talk about it, because people then can see it and hear it and feel it. And then we can break that down, and then hopefully they can see that in themselves and call themselves on it.
And we do have those available in the store as well.
Oh, you do? Cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend them.
And if anybody has any questions, as Peggy said, about these different items, you can just email me, and I'm S as in Stephanie, S Burgevin, P-U-R-G-E, V as in Victor, I-N, at ahaprocess.com. Or if you just send it to the questions email, I'll get it as well.
And if any of you want that article, the substitution article, just I never like to use something like, you know, or say something like that you can't get to. Email Stephanie, and she'll email me, and I'll shoot it out to you, or whatever, or email me directly, however Stephanie wants to do it.
Yeah, I've already gotten a number of emails asking for that information, so Peggy,
okay.
I'll forward those on to you.
Okay, that would be awesome.
I have another question for you, and that is, the person's asking, what voice do you use to respond to a child that speaks to you in a parent voice, or also if a child speaks to you in a child voice? How do you respond?
You respond back in the adult voice, because the adult voice you started. When a student comes at you in the parent voice, that's where I always start with. Usually it's what's going on. It's, hey, what's up? Help me understand the tone of voice, you know? What's up? You know, because as soon as you de-escalate that situation, the kid comes at you in the parent voice, as soon as you go to the adult voice, literally 9 times out of 10, they'll respond in the adult voice, and they'll tell you, I like to get the student to sit down, and I definitely don't want to be standing over them. Definitely don't want to. You know, how you're sitting or standing is very, very important when you talk about working with students. And generally, the teacher is standing and the student is sitting. And so I like to reverse that. And in terms of the child voice, well, those of us who have raised children, some of you may not have, we know that not responding to the child voice will extinguish it. If you respond to the whine, it will absolutely continue. When you talk to me in a different voice, I'll be able to answer that question. Or you hit them where they're at. Is it really that nobody likes you? Or tell me how you're feeling that you have to say they're picking on me, or, whatever. But you have to extinguish the whining. And sometimes, you know, with the little kids, you know, depending on how young, it is ignoring it. And that's not always easy. But to explain to the student, that is whining. And I can't really respond to whining, so help me understand where your adult voice is, or where your big girl voice is, or where your teenage voice is, or, you know, whatever it is. So that's what I would say. Come back in the adult voice, and you'll start working it. It takes a lot of practice. And I'll tell you, even with my own children at home, you find yourself going, oh, shoot, you know, there I went again. But when you have mutual respect and you have a relationship, that's when you say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I was treating you like a kid instead of the young adult that you are. Can we start over? Can we start this conversation over? So that's what I would say to that.
And I've got another question.
Okay.
How do you help your adult students to understand the substitution when disciplining their grandchildren, for instance, when in a particular culture it's acceptable or expected to say do or don't or shut up or sit down without alternatives?
Oh, that's interesting. I guess I'd probably need to know a little bit more about the cultural situation. I do a lot of cultural competency training, so I'm hearing a lot of kind of cultural things in the question.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear a lot of the generational pieces as well. I mean, if somebody told me to sit down, even now, I would. I mean, that's just my generation. So, again, I think it's the conversation about. I think it's the conversation about training, or, and it may even be the hidden rules. I don't know if I have enough information to answer the question appropriately, but again, if you can teach someone or show them the research now, and again, you know, with some populations of people, research wouldn't mean much, but to explain to them that that kids' brains don't know what you want them to do, so. That you have to tell them. It's kind of like, you know, we didn't talk at all today about language just because that's another whole situation, but of course I love to talk about that as well. But it's all about substituting the language. When you say to someone, shut up, you know, we've got a lot of issues with telling somebody to shut up. It is the parent voice. It's derogatory. But if shut up is all you've got, if you don't have another word, if you don't have another phrase, then our job is to substitute it with other language. And many times, folks, particularly folks in poverty, don't have the language to even give the substitute word. So that's where the only thing we can do is teach them substitute words. What's appropriate to say to your grandson is not shut up, but, you know, please be quiet. Or right now we need to all close our mouths and put our hands to our side, or, you know, whatever it is. So I don't know if I answered the question, and I don't think I probably did, but I tried.
Well, we've still got a little bit of time, so if the person wants to send us some more information, we'll try and dig a little deeper.
Yeah, or even email me, or, you know, Stephanie has my phone number, too. I never like to do these things without, you know, if somebody has more questions, you know, we at AHA Process are here to serve you. That's what our job is, and that's what we want to do. So, you know, we're never afraid to, or we always have time for you, and that means, you know, give us a call, send us an email. If there's a particular situation, Dr. Payne is just adamant about the fact that we treat all of you with mutual respect, and we do respect what you do every day in your schools. We all stand in amazement of you, and for those of you who appreciate the work of Dr. Payne, just know that it is mutual respect. We respect you as well.
And that's all that I have for now. So if you've got another nugget for us, that'd be great. And we'll see if we get more.
I don't know if I have any more nuggets. I may be fresh out of nuggets. Let me. How about if I end with a story? Would that work?
That's great.
Okay. One of the reasons that I feel really compelled to talk about voice, and I am not someone who was raised in poverty, although I do all the poverty training. I have, like Stephanie said at the beginning, I've been a teacher, I've been a policy advisor, I've been on school board, I've done lots of different stuff. But mostly I've been a parent. And, you know, I don't deny that probably the best training ground was parenting for understanding children. I wish somebody would have taught me about voices earlier in my life. I have twin daughters who are now 20, and one of my daughters dealt with a very serious eating disorder for over 5 years. At one point, she was, I don't know, she's probably 15 years old. She weighed 78 pounds. And I use the parent voice all the time. Eat this. You have to eat. Here's what's going to happen if you don't eat. You need 2,000 calories a day. Did you eat this? Parent voice, parent voice, parent voice. And you know what? The parent voice did not change her behavior. It was when she was hospitalized many times and went all across the country and lots of, if I had a nickel for every hour I spent with someone. But it was really when someone helped us get to the place that we could use the adult voice with Catherine and say, because I know, here's the deal, you can't make someone eat. But not only can you not make someone eat, you can't make someone study. You can't make someone behave in a classroom. You can't make someone really do anything. You can make life pretty miserable for them if they don't. But really what we want them to do is to become self-governing individuals. And it was never more apparent to me that when we started using the adult voice with Catherine that said, hey, help me understand, is this a meal that's going to be hard to eat? Is this a place that's going to be hard because there's going to be a lot of food there? Hey, is this, how can I help you negotiate what's going to happen today? You know, it's that adult voice that really changed my family. Catherine is healthy. She's 20 years old today. And see, I won't tell you what she weighs because she's a girl and she wouldn't want you to know. But she's beautiful and she's healthy. And I will tell you that it's when I lost the parent voice and when I gained the adult voice that that's when there were changes in her behavior. And it was so real to me that I know that in your classroom, you can't change kids' behaviors, but you can teach them with the adult voice to make better choices and to be the young adults that we want them to leave our schools with. So that's my very personal story from today. And know that the parent, adult, and child voice have made a difference. And I know they can make a difference to you, too, and to your students. If they can find that internal voice where they can ask for help when they need it, they can say what's real, they can say what they're uncomfortable with, your schools will be better places, and then there'll be improvement centers, not just assessment centers. So with that, I wish you from AHA Process an absolutely wonderful weekend. Stephanie and I thank you so much for your time. I mean, we just really appreciate the fact that you would let us come into your lives for an hour today. If there's anything AHA can do, Stephanie is certainly there for you. There's people in our Texas office that can help whatever you need. And we think about teaching your staff some of these things because, you know, in order to improve student achievement, we really have to improve relationships. So I wish you all well. And we hope to meet with you sometime soon.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you, Peggy, so much. This was wonderful. And I know that I'm walking away with a lot of ideas, and I hope that everybody else who's listening is walking away with some ideas as well. If you are ruminating on this for a little bit and have a question, please continue to go ahead and email any questions or thoughts or requests for the research to questions at AHA Process, and they will continue to forward them to me, and I will make sure that Peggy gets those questions. And as she said, we love to hear from you, and we are here to help you. So thank you all very much, and have a wonderful weekend.